Oren falls asleep at last on the third bus. He's been fighting it since Newburgh. Eyelids heavy as wet laundry, pried up again and again by sheer stubbornness. Finally, I think when he nods off. If I have to answer one more of his questions, I might lose it. Where are we going? He asked on the first bus. Someplace safe, I answered. He stared at me, even in the darkened bus, his eyes shining with too much smart for his age, and then looked away as if embarrassed for me. An hour later, he'd asked, as if there hadn't been miles of highway in between, where is it safe? There are places, I'd begun, as if telling him a bedtime story, but then I'd had to rack my brain for what came next. All I could picture were candy houses and chicken-legged huts that hid witches. Those weren't the stories he liked best anyway. He preferred the book of myths from the library. It's still in his pack, racking up finds with every mile, about heroes who wrestle lions and behead snake-haired monsters. There are places, I began again, trying to remember something from the book. Remember when Orestes flees the Furies and he goes to some temple so the Furies can't hurt him there? It was the temple of Apollo at Delphi, Oren said, and it's called a sanctuary. No one likes a smarty pants, I countered. Since he found that mythology book, he likes to show off how well he's learned all those Greek names. He'd liked Orestes right away because their names were alike. I'd tried to read around the parts that weren't really for kids, but he always knew if I skipped over something. And later, I saw him reading the story to himself, staring at the picture of the Furies with their snake hair and bat wings. At the next bus stop, he found the flyer for the hotline. It was called Sanctuary, as if Oren saying the word had made it appear. I gave him a handful of change to buy a candy bar while I made the call. I didn't want him to hear the story I'd have to tell. But even with him across the waiting room, standing at the snacks counter, his shoulders hunched under the weight of his Star Wars backpack, he looked like he was listening. The woman who answered the phone started to ask about my feelings, but I cut to the chase and told her that I'd left my husband and taken my son with me. He hit me, I said, and he told me he'd kill me if I tried to leave. I have no place to go. My voice had stuttered to a choked end. Across the waiting room, Oren had turned to look at me as if he'd heard me. But that was impossible. He was too far away. The woman's voice on the phone was telling me about a shelter in Kingston. Oren was walking across the waiting room. When he reached me, he said, "It can't be a place anyone knows about." I rolled my eyes at him like I didn't know that. But I repeated his words into the phone anyway, trying to sound firm. The woman on the other end didn't say anything for a moment. And looking into Oren's eyes, I was suddenly more afraid than I'd been since we left. "I understand," the woman said at last, slowly, as if she were speaking to someone who might not understand. I recognized the social worker's explaining voice and felt a prickle of anger that surprised me. I'd thought that I was past caring what a bunch of morally sanctimonious social workers thought about me. "We can arrange for a safe house, one no one will know about, but you might have to stay tonight in the shelter." Oren shook his head as if he could hear what the woman said, or as if he already knew I'd messed up. "It has to be tonight," I said. Again, the woman paused. In the background, a cat meowed and a kettle whistled. I pictured a comfortable, warm room, framed pictures on the walls, throw pillows on a couch, lamplight, and was suddenly swamped by so much anger I grew dizzy. Oren reached out a hand to steady me. The woman said something, but I missed it. There was a roaring in my ears. "Give me the number there," she was saying. "I'll make a call and call you right back."